in making sure that gender mainstreaming is taken care of. I believe that all of us, we are sure of what we're expected to do. What we are gathered here for today is for us to get knowledge or the mandate of how are we expected to take forward the issues of women, believing that this workshop will take us from one level to the other. After getting the workshop, we'll be knowing at least as to what our mandates are. That will also help us to know what we're expected to do and what we're not. I believe that each and every day when it comes, one needs to learn something. I believe that for us to be equipped is to give an ear to other people. You won't know everything, so let's give the people who are going to workshop us an ear, engage with them where we didn't understand. Let's ask for clarity. Hoping that after this meeting we'll be a better people. Thanks. Do we have any apologies?
Thank you, members. 14 apologies. Member Shifunga, Mrs. Abene Aiken, Mr. Soma, Mr. Fale, Ms. Limo Dushan, Mr. Khwate, Ms. Marazzi, Ms. Daba, Ms. Fano, Ms. Mkile, Ms. Fadaneza, Ms. Kukane, and Ms. Kutambe.
We have 14 apologies. Do we accept them? 14 apologies.
Chair, we know them, and I also have an apology for Honorable Nokolo Abraham.
It's another apology. Members,
may I please register the apology of Honorable Deputy Chief Whip already?
Deputy Chief Whip also? Meaning that we'll receive 15 apologies. 16. Thanks. We're proceeding with our meeting. I believe that we all have the agenda in front of us. We don't. What's wrong? I'm sorry about it. I thought that this was tested already.
Thank you.
all this will be invalid. Yes, particularly in the
okay, thank you.
I only see one member from the DA, or two members from the DA. Apology for Liver is attending, I don't know, but he's outside. And Majozi is still in Joburg. He was having a funeral in Joburg. We are three women tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mama. Mr.
Lembe,
the apology to the second. Thank you. Can we proceed?
Thank you, Chief.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, honourable members. My colleague and I are presenting on gender responsive budgeting today, and we do this in the context of carrying some of the work from the first parliament through into the sixth parliament, because in the first parliament there was an initiative by both the Multiport Women's Caucus and the Portfolio Committee on Women to look at how to institutionalize gender responsive budgeting, both within government departments but also in our own processes as parliamentary committees that we engage, as members engage with budgets from a gender perspective. So starting just broadly with what gender responsive budgeting is, it's an attempt to systematically look at the gender implications of fiscal policy, government planning, and the allocation of government resources. So we look at both the expenditure of government, but also the income in terms of taxes, to look at how it affects gender issues. So the idea with this is to maintain gender into economic policy making and to transform relationships in our society through the budget process. So by this we mean that we want to be able to engage with the entire budget from a gender perspective. So we look at all issues, including issues like health, education, public works, etc., from the allocations and looking at how they impact not only on men and women, but on the lives of boys and girls, and importantly, the lives of LGBTQ+ persons. Now, the benefits of gender-responsive budgeting do not only apply to the girls' groups of persons. Research shows that where countries engage in gender-responsive budgeting, it positively impacts on the whole of society. Because when you improve the lives of women, of girls, of LGBTIQ+ persons, it has a positive impact on everybody. Now, government budgets are important in doing three things. They are important in allocating resources, so we look at the service delivery of government there. They are important also in trying to redistribute income and wealth. So we must use our budgetary policy to address inequity in income and wealth and the trajectory from our past. But budgets are also important in stabilizing the economy. And so we need to look at budgets in order to look at how to promote a certain level of employment, for stability in prices, for economic growth, for environmental sustainability and balance. So this requires judgments that affect what our priorities are and what is not acceptable in terms of looking at issues like unemployment, debt, interest rates, and so on. So just to say that when we look at gender-responsive budgeting in our country, it relates to an international context where international instruments like the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women actually provide that countries must seek to engage in gender budgeting. On our own continent, we look at instruments like the Select Guidelines on Gender-Responsive Budgeting, which seeks to provide minimum standards for gender-responsive budgeting that would look at how we reduce gaps in gender relationships. I want to move from the international context to looking at a little bit of history of gender-responsive budgeting in our country. So we engaged in what was called the Women's Budget Initiative. I'm sure many of the honourable members know about this initiative, which was launched as part of the Commonwealth Secretariat Initiative as a collaborative project between the Joint Standing Committee on Finance, the Institute for Democracy in South Africa, and the Community Agency for Social Inquiry. In its first 3 years, the Women's Budget Initiative looked at an analysis of all the departmental votes at national government level, and this was published in 3 books. It then went on to look at 5 case studies of budgets at local government level, and in the 5th year of the project, it looked at the revenue of national, provincial, and local governments. So the Women's Budget looked at 5 key areas. One was the situation of women and men, boys and girls, in a given sector, such as health. The second was, do the policies and programs of government address gender gaps? 3, has government budgeted sufficiently to implement gender-sensitive policy and programs? 4, what were the output delivery of budgets? Was the money spent as planned? And 5, what are the outcomes? How did the policy and the programs and the expenditure close gender gaps? Now, the Women's Budget Initiative was an international model of society and from academia. And they had a reference group that was comprised of government officials, members of parliament, and NGOs. For the researchers to do their work, what the members of parliament did was they facilitated access to information on government budgets that could be used for the analysis. Now, the Women's Budget Initiative was very successful because it was driven by people who were gender activists who were really passionate about the initiative. But the single biggest challenge of the Women's Budget was never was successful in institutionalizing gender budgeting in all the government departments. And because of this, because it wasn't institutionalized, it was something that was done without being institutionalized, what it meant was when those who were driving the initiative left the project, it eventually petered out. Now, just to talk a little bit about Parliament's role in gender responsive budgeting, part of Parliament's role is to ensure that government service delivery promotes gender equity and to look at the impact of government spending on women and men, boys, girls, and LGBTIQ plus persons. And to look at that in terms of the how it intersects with issues such as race, class, sexual orientation, spatial location, given our history of statutory discrimination, and we look at, for example, the effects of poverty on black women in particular, it is particularly important to engage in looking at the budget in terms of how it's transforming and changing the quality of black women's lives. So in monitoring the impact of government service delivery, we have to have access to gender disaggregated data. So if we want to be able to do this successfully, if a committee in Parliament, for example, is looking at housing provision, then we need to be able to collect information on women-headed households and the extent to which housing policy is cognizant of gender. So some of the key questions for members of Parliament in assessing government service delivery are how are women and girls benefiting from service delivery? How is this different to how men and boys benefit from service delivery? How are LGBTIQ plus persons benefiting from service delivery? What are the negative gender consequences of service delivery and how can we address them? Then we need to look at, importantly, at the level at which Parliament works. Members need to look at how do we incorporate the gender analysis into the administrative data that we scrutinize, like our strategic plans, the annual reports of government departments. Who are the role players that are involved in service delivery and are they adequately skilled in the gender analysis methods? Are there systems in place to set objectives and goals in relation to gender-sensitive service delivery? And what tools have been used by governments to monitor impact in this regard? So, for parliamentarians to do this, we need to be able to understand the gender assumptions that guide the laws and the policies that we are seeking to implement. And it's important always then to look at legislation in terms of its gender impact. Now, just to mention that how we spend says something about what are the policy priorities and what are the spending priorities of government. But it also says something about what is not a spending priority and a policy. And key questions that we need to ask when we look at the budget from a gender perspective is, are money ring-fenced for issues such as gender-based violence? And this, you know, there's an attempt underway through the Interim Steering Committee process to change how we budget for gender-based violence. But in the past, when a committee in Parliament tried to engage with what was spent on gender-based violence and asked questions of the Departments of Justice and Police and Social Development and Health, what we found was that those departments had to go back retrospectively and add up what they spent. But they did not have that data available readily. It was something exercise that they had to actually engage in. So the Women's Budget Initiative ran from 1996 until about the year 2000. And when we saw the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities being created in 2012, we saw a resurrection of the attempt to resuscitate gender budgeting. So between since 2012, there wasn't much that was happening, but when the department came into being, they had the process of discussion. In 2012, the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities responsive budgeting model in selected departments. But what they told us at the time was that they had difficulty with this, and the difficulty was in getting the different government departments to cooperate in this exercise. So since then, there's been an attempt to, in order to get government departments to cooperate, there's a need for a political direction, and this was in the form of a policy framework. And then just to mention, in September 2017, the Multi-Party Women's Caucus called the National Treasury to a meeting and asked it to account for Treasury attempts to institutionalize gender equality budgeting. And what Treasury told the Women's Caucus at the time was, while technically the systems were in place to do this, they were unable to proceed because they wanted a political directive, they wanted a national policy framework. And at the time, the Women's Caucus was wanting to not stall the process, to push ahead, or Treasury to push ahead, but it was very clear from Treasury's side that they would not do so in the absence of a policy framework. So, to just also step back to say that in around 2017, the Department of Women took a very important decision that we can't just talk about gender responsive budgeting without linking it to government planning and to monitoring and evaluation processes. And so a different language started to emerge within the department, and this was the language of gender responsive budgeting, planning, monitoring, and evaluation. And this is very important because if you try to engage in gender budgeting, but it is not linked to our overall planning framework, then you are very unlikely to be able to make it. So from the National Development Plan, our policy vision to 2030, but also importantly, our five-year plan in terms of the media strategic framework, if we do not have something that is a policy priority and a spending priority within the medium strategic framework, it's going to be problematic or difficult to cascade that down into the annual performance plan of the department. So we have to start with that medium strategic framework, and government departments will take from there into their annual performance plan. And so the policy framework is now seeking to link these processes, planning, budgeting, and monitoring and evaluation. So key to this is now also looking at sources of revenue, looking at the budget review and expenditure reports of government departments. And I just want to mention as an exercise in something that is interesting is we all in February, when the minister gives the budget speech, get a copy of the budget review. And I'm not sure how many members actually thought to count the word gender in that budget review, but it's entirely silent in terms of an attempt in that budget review to do the gender analysis of the budget review. And we see, I think Canada in 2016 decided to make it a mandate that the budget review has to be analyzed from a gender perspective, and every government department has to do a budget review that looks at its budget from a gender perspective. So, in November 2018, the Department of Women hosted a national summit on gender responsive budgeting and planning, and this was to ensure the development and implementation of gender responsive planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation, and auditing framework, to urge government departments at national, provincial, and local level to institutionalize gender responsive planning and budgeting, including the mandate paper, the medium-term strategic plans, annual performance plans, and budgets, to develop and implement gender responsive monitoring and evaluation systems, including regular performance and expenditure reviews, and strengthen the capacity of the Department of Women in the Presidency to effectively lead, coordinate, and monitor the implementation of what is then termed GRPMEEA. So that's planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation, and auditing. So the summit's result of the framework was put in place clear gender responsive indicators, and that we would now begin to work towards institutional capacity. Just to mention that the to the women's caucus and to the portfolio committee on women on the framework, and so I think that in terms of anticipating what might be a next step, it is that certainly is a departure point for engaging with that framework. Just to say that what we for ourselves as Member of Parliament, not myself, but for yourself as Member of Parliament, if you look from page 12 in the document, there are some gender oversight tools, and to remind ourselves that key in looking at gender responsive budgeting, we need to look at the implementation of legislation and policy, government service delivery, the implementation of international and regional instruments. So, for example, the Commission on the Status of Women was meant to have met in this week. We need, it is an international mandate, and we need to also be able to monitor our delivery at that level. Also, in terms of public participation in parliamentary processes, how are we spending money, initiatives like the Women's Parliament, public hearings and so on, how do we seek to enhance the participation of women, girls, LGBTIQ plus persons. Then in overseeing public expenditure, in overseeing gender sensitivity internally in Parliament, and in overseeing the commitments made by Parliament with regards to promoting gender equity. Honourable members, I'm going to stop there. My colleague is going to just come in quickly and talk about the role of the Women's Caucus in promoting this work.
Thank you very much, Joyce.
Thank you, the presenters so far, and the chair, and the speakers, and all of the members in the room. The document I have here, I can say I know the content, but the document that you have just presented, the one I have, has jumped from 9 to 20. And you have referred to some pages that I do not have. Just in case for the students and the women to do that. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. My presentation will be on the document that's titled The Role of the Multiple Women Caucus in Gender Responsive Planning and Budgeting. The purpose of this presentation is an attempt to point out the role that the Multiple Women Caucus can play in gender responsive budgeting, in that the Multiple Women's Caucus is better positioned to play a role in two ways. The first way a Multiple Women's Caucus can play a role in gender responsive budgets is through individual membership of members in various committees. As we all know that members of the Multiple Women's Caucus are members of various portfolio and select committees. The second way this Multiple Women's Caucus is playing in gender responsive planning and budgeting is identification of focused activities that can be regarded as gender responsive planning and budgeting initiatives. Let me start on the role of the individual members in various committees. As you all know, the Parliament achieves its mandate through portfolio committees and select committees. And our members of the Multiple Women Caucus in these committees can ensure gender responsiveness during the legislative process, during public participation, and during oversight. During the lawmaking processes, members can ensure that laws that are adopted are gender responsive, in that any law that is adopted tends to lead to adoption of programs and allocation of budget. So if laws that are adopted are gender responsive, then it paves the way for gender responsive programs. During the legislative process, the members can request that they be briefed on the gendered implications of the laws that are being proposed. They can also advocate, like, for empowerment of male members within our communities to be able to adopt the gender lens when they are considering laws in front of the committees. During public participation, members of the multi-department caucus in committees can ensure that women have a voice during participation by making sure that women are adequately participating and are represented. Also during the oversight, members have a critical role to play to ensure gender responsive budgeting. They can assess gender responsive budgeting by requesting information related to, if let's say there is a department before the committee, the members can ask for preferential expenditure for women programs that that particular department is adopting to equalize opportunities for women. They can ask for funding of programs that, they can request information related to funding of programs that mostly benefit them and that contribute to gender equality. They can also ask for impact assessment of how women are currently benefit on the service that are provided. And an important tool to use is to ask for gender disaggregated information. Let me come on the role of the multi-department caucus as a collective in gender responsive budget. I want to mention that the commitment by this multi-department caucus to empower members on gender responsive planning and budgeting is one of the important roles of the multi-department caucus. But in addition, training of members on gender responsive budgeting will ensure that members have uniform knowledge and application of gender responsive planning and budget tools in their various committees, thus fulfilling the role as individual members of the multi-department caucus. Ms. Swazin has already mentioned that the Ministry of Women has developed a gender responsive planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation, and an auditing framework. There is a plan to request the ministry to brief the multi-department caucus on that framework as part of empowering the members of the multi-department caucus too, because the framework was developed to ensure that there is coherence in assessing gender responsiveness of programs and budgets in various committees. In addition to the capacity building of members, the multi-department caucus has also identified certain activities that are gender responsive planning and budgeting. And this includes the Sanitary Dignity Project. This is a project that has been inherited from the first parliament. It's a gender responsive budgeting initiative in the sense that the removal of VAT from sanitary pads, which came into effect last year, April 29, is about releasing tax burdens on women programs. The continuing lobbying for provision of free sanitary products to indigent women and men is a preferential expenditure, that is, funds will be reinvested for products that benefit and are used by women. Another initiative by the current multi-partnering caucus in ensuring gender responsiveness is the identified focus area of lobbying for gender-sensitive parliament and workplaces. The establishment of these family-friendly facilities in workplaces is about ensuring equal employment opportunities for gender, like daycare centers, nursing facilities, and other family-friendly facilities. Those are pro-women programs that allow working mothers to continue working while raising children. Of course, these family facilities will benefit both men and women employees, but also taking into consideration that women bear the burden of gender implication of child care, so it's mostly new women who are looking after children. So these family facilities are likely to benefit women more. The other one, another initiative by the current Majority Women Caucus that contributes to the gender responsive planning and budgeting is the issue of strengthening of the National Gender Missionary. The strengthening of national gender machinery will contribute to effective functioning of its structures. One of the important structures of the NGM are what is called gender focal points or gender focal persons. Those are the persons or points that are responsible for gender mainstreaming within various institutions. So lobbying and advocating for effective functioning gender focal points will contribute to effective gender mainstreaming, and they will ensure that budget and programs of government institutions are responsive to the needs of women, men, and girls and boys. Lastly, honorable members, the Multiple Women's Caucus is mandated by the June rule to act as an advisory board. So they are also positioned to influence other parliamentary committees. They can make submissions to these committees on any issue affecting women before various parliamentary committees. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Tembeka. Honorable members, we're listening to the two presenters. The first one presented about gender responsive budgeting and planning. The second one was presenting about the role of multi-party women in gender responsive planning and budgeting. Can we engage the two presentations? Honorable Ma, speak on number one, number two, three, and then number four. You'll be five and then six. Oh, Minister, you'll be number seven.
Yes, before you give me, I just wanted to check because this is the agenda. It's supposed to be two presentations.
Oh, the first one presented the two
in one.
In one.
Okay. And then
the one is so. Yes. Okay. Honorable Master.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all members. Firstly, I think one must welcome the presentation, and I think it's very important, Chairperson, that we receive such a workshop on a gender responsive budgeting. I think for me it was quite clear, and one was able to get insight as to where we are currently. The first point, Chairperson, is on the issue of institutionalization. In terms of the institutionalized gender budgeting in all government departments. And I think, Chair, I don't know whether to raise it as a concern or maybe a request, in that we are able to get a fuller picture in terms of the process of the existence and the implementation of the policy framework. The presentation highlights the fact that the process was kick-started in September 27, and currently there is an indication that there is a framework in existence. But in terms of where it is currently housed or whether it has been adopted, I think there's still a question mark around that. It should be a concern, Chairperson, because we know that in the absence of a policy framework, we will have government departments which are going to be shying away from the issue of implementation of gender-sensitive budgeting. And we are able to then further equip government departments to play their role in such, but also guide Parliament in terms of playing an oversight. The other issue, Chairperson, which is going to be the second and last, is the issue of the workshopping of all parliamentarians. I think currently it is a good step that we workshop the multi-party women's caucus, but I think it's a duty for all members of Parliament to be wary of such, because in terms of the oversight, it's not only the women members of the portfolio committees that must guard jealousy, but also equally so, our male counterparts have a responsibility to ensure that gender sensitive budgeting takes place. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. I think perhaps we are going to speak on one note. I agree with the previous honourable because I'm also raising the issue of institutionalization. It is key to all of us. If the department know exactly what they are going to do and it's uniform, I think we are going to be moving on one page. So we welcome that the framework is ready and we'll be ready to receive it. And also I know the department will also, if they have it, you know, will not have problems. Also on us to monitor, what is it to monitor? We know that each different department exactly what is it that they're going to do. So we welcome that, Minister, we'll be ready for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the previous speaker covered me on that, and I was going to emphasize the issue of if we can get access on that framework so that we are able to engage on those issues. But also, Chair, of importance, I think we must also emphasize the issue of the machinery on the ground. And such training, without undermining the information that we just received, has been there in the department, especially I'm talking about us who are coming from the municipality. But I think the support, the problem is the support and monitoring and making sure that whatever that we speak about, it happens. I think we must reinforce that and make sure that in implementation, that's where we are strong. Because we will next time may find ourselves sitting here talking about the same thing. If we can strengthen that area. And then I also welcome the issue of that framework, because maybe it will definitely give us an indication as to when we go to the department and look at those issues, we are not all over. We sit on the relevant points that we have to raise with the department, and even the department will know exactly what is it that we are looking for when they come to us. They won't be one wandering hand and be all over too. So we must make sure that we get, even if we can have a checklist, that is for us. That now the department is, I'm having this checklist for me to empower me to be able to ask a relevant question. And then on the issue of preferential budget, the ring fence, I think we are also having a very serious challenge on that area, because most of the leadership that is on this issue of budget, it's made our male comrades. And it seems as if our male comrades, some who are in those positions, they really don't understand exactly what we want. We want our money to be ring-fenced. We want to make sure that that money, we see it, even when they present the budget, we see it that this is the money, this is the budget that is going to focus on the issues of women. Cascading down to the department. I think I'll stop with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. I'm on the side. Thank you for the presentation. I just have a couple of questions, and I hope that you can answer it. If you can't, I understand. First, it's really good to know, Minister, that the framework is ready. We look forward to having a look at it and seeing the best way that we can support as a committee the framework. I wanted to find out if we've been using a women's budget from 1996 till 2000, if that means that the past many years, what have we actually been using to implement a gender-sensitive budget, and how has that affected the national gender machinery? I also wanted to speak about your your presentation that speaks on the LGBTIQA plus and in terms of expenditure and also how do we involve and spend more money procuring from those businesses. But my biggest question is how do you determine and how do you desegregate gender in terms of LGBTIQA plus? Because we never want to come into a position where we force a person to tell us their orientation and, you know, in case that they might still be feeling, you know, that they're not ready to come out and speak about it. So how would we then monitor who we do business with in terms of LGBTIQA plus? So just some clarity on that. And then you speak about individual roles of members of the of multi-party women's caucus in terms of implementation, monitoring, and oversight. Chair, this is my problem. Just looking at the lack of attendance in this meeting, there are instances where women don't put other women first. And we can debate this, but as a young woman, I have come across this many times, where other women, you know, they don't want to assist or they don't want to help. So how do we then ensure that individual women going on oversight, looking at budgets, looking at annual reports, looking at quarterly reports, keep gender in mind? You see, there are some of us who are feminists who do that without even thinking. Our focus is women and the LGBTIQA+, but there are other women who may not look at it in that way. So I do agree with Honourable Masisa that we must ensure that the men also get this training, that the men also start thinking about the importance of being gender sensitive when looking at budgets and planning. So I just wanted to raise that. And also, I'm happy to hear about the daycare centers. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I'm 29 years old, and I don't have any kids. But I would love to have kids one day. But it scares me to think of falling pregnant in Parliament, because where's my child going to go, and how am I going to look after it, especially being an MP from Gauteng? So sometimes I wonder, maybe I should have had my kids earlier, then I wouldn't have been sitting with this problem. But no, she wanted to go study, she wanted to do something with her career. So I'm happy to hear that there are some initiatives that are coming to help us, and especially now that we have so many more young women in Parliament, to help us with these family orientated spaces. So I look forward to hearing more about that. Thank you. Number five.
Thank you, Chair.
Let me also.
Thank you, Chair. Can we pass one and two? Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Can I take the opportunity of welcoming the gender budgeting framework and to say that maybe the question that I can actually pose to the ministry, to the minister, is to say how far are we in terms of the process of thinking of implementing the instrument, which I think might actually be a little bit challenging if you look at the fact that our structures within government, the gender focal points, looks like they need some form of resuscitation. But the question I want to ask is how far are we with the process, and as to whether the instrument itself, is it user-friendly, as the departments would be receiving it in order for them to actually do the gender budgeting mainstreaming? Will they be in the position to know exactly what they are doing? Is there any plan to actually do some form of training for whoever is responsible for it, the government department? One thing that is actually also important is to understand how processes are going to actually be flowing in terms of this process with the ministry, mainstreaming. At what point does the Commission on Gender Equality come in as part of the machinery in terms of monitoring the mainstreaming, so that at some stage ourselves as caucus can call the Commission on Gender Equality to say, please give us reports on monitoring, so that we can be in the position to assess as to whether this is actually really happening and whether it's actually eliciting results.
And of course, in terms of the portfolio committee, we will portfolio committee in Parliament, they should actually also themselves clearly manage to put in place systems of monitoring as to whether the mainstreaming in government is actually taking place, so that where it's not taking place, we manage to actually try by all means to put some energy into it. The one thing that is important, that goes hand in hand with mainstreaming, and which I've actually apportioned to the Commission on Gender Equality, though if you're mainstreaming even within the department, you can monitor to whether it's taking place. Maybe this must actually be put into the KPA of the DGs of government departments, so that we can hold them accountable in terms of gender mainstreaming within government departments. Their plans should be such that they actually include a provision as to how the budget of government departments is catered for women. And this shouldn't be something that is only of interest to female members of the executive. And we need to actually look at how do we actually ensure that all members of the executive are equally interested in mainstreaming this instrument, so that, you know, we shouldn't have a caucus and then we have female members of the executive here, but the male members of the executive are not here. And in other government departments, those government departments are actually run by male members of the executive. There's got to be a way of actually ensuring that the male members of the executive are actually sensitized in order for us to be in the position to manage to successfully implement this instrument. One thing that is quite evident that is important is the fact that we need to resuscitate the national gender machinery in terms of what I've actually been mentioning. And it's good that we actually have had a seminar that was looking at resuscitation of the national gender machinery last week. It will be good to understand and maybe and give a brief report as to what is the outcome towards really resuscitating the machinery, so that we must soon have a forum that will actually be called a resuscitated national machinery that will then begin the process of actually developing mechanisms within government departments in a form of a strong gender focal points. I thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you, Chair. As I join my the other members in welcoming the presentation, Chair, I do support the workshop so that we are able to know what is entailed in the framework, Chair. And because it will help us that as members in our various constituencies, later we are able to take it down to raise awareness amongst women, bureaucrats and all politicians. But my challenge remains that when I was listening to the presentation, I realized that the gender responsive budgeting brings together the two issues that commonly are not associated, which is gender equality and Public Finance Management Act. And according to me, in principle, it should be incorporated into all the stages of budgeting. But when I look at all the presentations, it's like there are challenges of resources, and government alone won't manage. So I think that the presentation is good, and a day will not do. I think we need to have continuous workshops, because even the hours that we have just spent here, I think there are issues that we need to process as women, so that when we go down, we do understand and we are able to engage other key stakeholders, even the private sectors, including like at the local government. Because when you look at the challenges that are facing women, it's huge. And the gender equality is not about the issues that affect women only. It affects everybody. It's a societal issue. So it needs time. It needs more resources. That's why I was saying that we need to strategize as to how are we going to deal with all those issues. But my proposal, Chair, will be, as much as I support the workshop, we must have a program which that will have the timeline that after the workshop about the framework. At our constituency, we must also have the timeline as how are we going to do strategically looking at the budget issues, and the time, how are we going to make sure that we raise awareness. Because at the local,
is where issues are happening at the ground. So when we are addressing issues at this level, it will be easy for us to take it down to all societies. I don't want to say women because it's not women issues, it's everybody's issue. So that we are able even to lobby other progressive male people who are deployed strategically to assist us in making sure that we realize our objectives as women. So I do support the workshop and the awareness programs. But thank you, Jen.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. A very good morning to everyone in the room. I do want to say the Minister of Women, Children and Persons with Disability already sent to us, all of us in our departments, the framework that we are talking about. So we have all received that framework. However, for me, the challenge is receiving a framework is one thing and getting it done is another. And I think part of what is our big problem here is we will institutionalize by having the document being sent to each and every department and everyone knowing that they've got to do something. But let me tell you, everybody scrambles around it. And everybody scrambles around this because they're ticking in the box. Everybody scrambles because they just thinking, we have to do it because these women want us to do it. And I think that's where the biggest problem lies. And for me, it starts with all of us in our different political parties. I repeat, our different political parties, because we are women here of caucus, but we come from different political parties. We seem to agree with each other when we're sitting here as the women, but the people that have to also help us implement this are sitting in our different political parties. And in our different political parties, if you were to take the resolutions and decisions of conferences of our own different political parties, and check as to whether this that we are talking about here, it is something that has been accepted, absorbed, and appreciated by the different political party leaders that we have. Because it is the leaders, ultimately, that have to make sure that this happens. Then you go to the question, who are the leaders in our different political parties? Have we, in our different political parties, workshopped the leaders in our political parties to actually appreciate what we are trying to do here? Those of us who've been here since 1994, of course, in and out sometimes, can tell you if we were to call PREP's governor today and ask her to come here and listen to us talking, I think she would weep. She wouldn't cry, she would weep. If she would think of all the work that was done from that time, prior 1994 to 1994 and everything that was done thereafter. So for me, the first thing is, let us as women in our different political parties really try to push for this firstly in our political parties. Secondly, for me, is about consistency even amongst ourselves. Because what becomes a problem is that you can talk about the press governors, the Frinijinwalas of the time, and what they instilled in us, because they were people who had studied, who had appreciated, and they tried to instill this in us to understand it, hoping that there would be consistency. It wouldn't be that because Frinijinwala left, because Balegambete left, because so-and-so is no longer there, it means what they started is not being followed. Therefore, the consistency for me is critical. The third issue is with regard to the portfolio committees. The portfolio committees, in my view, are supposed to already by now be having this framework in their hands, so that when I, as the Minister of Social Development or any other minister, comes to the portfolio committee to account for the budget and all that, because we're going to be going through that now, it means the chairpersons of the portfolio committees should be able to say to the members of the portfolio committee, this is one of the issues that we're going to use as a yardstick when we ask the presenters as in the department. Fourthly, it cannot be that it will be the responsibility only of the Department of Women that carries this, because it's a burden, but it's a burden that I think we have to carry as women. It's not their responsibility alone, it's the responsibility of all of us. Therefore, when we come to the portfolio committee, you should be the ones that say to the others, you need to ask the department, because here's the challenge also. The officials, they have this in their hands, but the officials also see it as an extra burden. So how do we make the officials, I come now to the point of the capacity of the state, because you can't look at the capacity of the state with regard to all the other things, but when it comes to the issue of gender and women, you don't include it within the officials who are supposed to be developing, because it's not me, the minister, who develops it. And I can tell you, it is a heavy burden on us who are ministers, because you've got to read all the strategic plan documents, the annual plan, the quarterly reports. You've got to be searching for this in all those reports. But if you had officials who automatically absorb this and think when they're doing the budgeting, they don't have to be pushed by the minister to do that, it's within them. You find that they find this to be a burden. I tell you, because I know when I got the letter and I called my DG and called the DDGs and said, what about this? They hadn't even thought about it. They haven't even discussed it in their management. So all I'm saying is we've got a lot of work to do. Can we please be consistent in that work, number one? Number two, can we sometimes remove the political party cap for that moment and say, as women, this is something that affects women, because when women do not have the finances, nobody asks at us whether they are ANC or DA or whatever. If you're a woman out there and you're struggling, it's not about the political party you belong to. It's about the fact that we have a patriarchy in South Africa that is refusing to go away because we are not consistent in terms of making the demands that we have to make as women. Lastly, Shepherd, an apology that I'm taking this long. To the young woman who, the honorable member there who spoke, the struggle continues. One of the things that you need to appreciate, that many of us who are sitting here are almost going there to rest. And if you guys don't pick that up, if you don't pick up and understand and appreciate the struggle that we have carried since we were 18, most of us who joined the struggle, we're 16, 17, 18. We are in our 60s right now. And there's something that we won't stop. There is, you know, a time for us to go. It's your time to take this and not be moaning about it. Don't moan about it. We didn't moan about it. We just stood up and did what we had to do. We had the National Women's Coalition, which is one of the vehicles that helped us as women in the 90s and onwards. Right now, if you talk about the Women's Coalition, it's almost a dead thing. And why did we kill it? Because this was the vehicle that we used to fight. We used this vehicle even during the negotiations when we were not in the negotiation table. We had to go organize ourselves as Women Coalition. We went there to Kempton Park. We demanded that they open the doors. We said the political parties who do not have women in their delegations, they must have a seat that remains open to show that they don't want women in here. So where did that all go? We cannot be lose sight of everything because we belong to different political parties, and then there's also the internal dynamics of each and every political party. The issue of women remains. Whether there are dynamics in parties or not, the challenges that face women remain the same. And it's my plea to the Women's Caucus that can we take a step back and say, what is it that we did well in the 25 years? What do we want the next 25 years to look like? And let the young people step up, because the next 25 years and the next 50 are theirs. We've taken ours, and we've been very strong in ours. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join honorable members to welcome the presentation and acknowledge that join those that say we need the workshop also on the framework as pronounced by the minister. I think it will be very helpful. But again, I think that workshop as it comes, we should then be able to even understand the cycle of government and the processes. Because sometimes you miss the processes and therefore you lose in that process. And when is the budget process start, when do you make intervention and all those other things. So I think it's very, very much important. And the other issue, as Minister Zulu is indicating, it's important that we should not get tired to mobilize one another as women. And for me, we should start by appreciating that we have a speaker who's a woman, we have a chief who's a woman, we have the 50% of women cabinet and deputy ministers who are women, and we have chairpersons that are women, and start to say, how then do you use this weapon that you have in our disposal to make sure that we entrench gender responsive budgeting in our terms. But the other thing is that we should then again mobilize our public service, women public managers in public service, for them to understand it, to talk the language that we talk so that the program becomes easier for all of us. Because, you know, in public service there are a lot of excuses. You find that when the technical skills, they say women are not there, they've not applied. So then Abu Mali, Premi Dinwala, and those that came before us, they never get tired to go and search and mobilize people to say there is this thing. Women and the women, they didn't go out and get other women who are outside us who have got particular knowledge to mobilize them to be part of the process. The last thing is the 30% that has set aside. You know, if you listen to the department, there is, and I believe it's a deliberate confusion. Because it says 30% set aside for previously excluded people. So it will mean youth, people with disabilities, and women. And for them it says that target, when it's youth, it doesn't matter whether it's a woman, it's a young woman or a young man. When it's disability, it doesn't matter whether it's a young woman disability women or disability men. So we should then have a principle, all of us, to say 30% we refer to women either in disability or in young women. And it should start from us as women to make sure that young women are part and parcel of our process, because they should, as the Minister Zulu has indicated. Thank you, Chair. Those are the issues that I wanted to raise.
The last one is Honourable Lucas.
Thank you very much.
Should I continue?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson.
participate in this conference. Let me also join those that welcome the very informative presentation that we just received. Just last week we had a summit, we arranged a summit with local government in provinces here in Parliament, and one of the issues that was discussed was the issue of gender responsive budgeting, and there were very interesting views that came up, particularly from the local government here as well as the provinces. But I think we will give the report, we will process the report to the multi-party women's caucus, because the request was from provinces that the multi-party women's caucus at the national level must also stay to making sure that they establish and also develop a multi-party women's caucus at the level where they are. So if Florida also has a gender commission, gender commission, so all of them have got structures, but there is no uniformity, and that is what is important, that we should possibly collaborate with them so that we make sure that we have the same kind of objective and that we are able to do the same areas. But also the issue of the oversight bodies or the institution supporting democracy, it is confirmed is that we have an oversight role as a multi-party women's caucus, and our role in terms of oversight is to make sure that there is a gender perspective or the women's agenda is being driven, is being taken forward. And how do we determine it? Once again, I want to emphasize the fact that we need to collaborate with different oversight bodies. For instance, the Gender Commission has got a very interesting research document that they actually commissioned as part of their commission. They are actually identifying all the weaknesses over the 25 years and how it happens that we are still at a stage where we are still trying to get to where we are supposed to have been after so many years. And I think it is important that in terms of the issues that we want to address and in terms of the role that we are supposed to be playing, that we must make sure that in terms of particularly government departments, the issue of the gender machinery is being taken serious. Because I think the report of the Gender Commission will assist us. I don't want to repeat what they have said in the, I think it will assist us because it is actually giving a clear report on how provinces are implementing the whole issue of the gender machinery, how it is implemented, gender focus persons, all of it that is being mentioned in this area of gender responsive budgeting. So I think it's very important that we need to collaborate and to work together because we as a market are in the system. Our primary responsibility is to make sure that we do have a government that is responsive. I think one of the people spoke about the fact about state identities, Minister Zulu. The issue is responsiveness and accountability. And that is what our role is, to make sure that there is responsiveness with regards to issues of gender, but also with regards to issues of the women's agenda. People will blame us that we don't take other issues serious. We speak about women, but we don't take other areas serious. We don't take LGBTIQ and all the other acronyms that is there. We don't take them serious. But it is first and foremost, we need to establish where we are going to initiate our actions from. And the issue of gender responsive budgeting, I was like, Honorable Zulu, I was just thinking when I saw the topic, I was just thinking about Greg's governor and how she went to all the provinces to explain this issue of gender budgeting to all of us and so on. And Greg was about 1996, and we are here in 2020, and we are still speaking about the very same thing. I think we need to take our facts serious so that we get to a point where we implement the areas that we have identified long ago that will take us forward as women, and that will bring us to the gender perspective. Thank you.
Chair. We welcome the presentation. I think, Chair, I will agree with many of the speakers that we have spoken about women's issues for years. And some of us sitting here have been part of many women's associations, of many women bodies. And there was a stage where all women were talking about having a women's charter, having a women's policy in government that would allow women head at home to be given a privilege to have houses. But it has never happened. So Minister Zulu has spoken about the committee having this document. We are going to start with budgeting. But for me, that we always talk, but we can never show a percentage that over a period of so many years, this is what we have achieved when we are lobbying women's issues. But we always end up on paper, always end up with policies, always end up with lobbying women's issues. Now, I am saying that if there was a preferential women's charter that guides the Department of Human Settlements, that through local government, this is the number of women headed homes that we have. And over a period of 5 years, we can actually say that we have benefited so many women without them being on the waiting list since 1986 to date, waiting for a house. But that through our efforts, we'll be able to say that this is what we have lobbied, this is what we have achieved. Because we have the minister in the presidency for women. And that must be able to assist us to say this is what we are lobbying departments to do. But this is where we are at. Because we must remember that the many women's bodies that are there are every day writing to government as well, lobbying for women's issues. But I think that us seated here in this house are supposed to be the first point of departure to assist those women outside, whether it's through their bodies, whether it's through us in our committees. But for as long as we can only talk and come up with policies and come up with the best documents on paper, but we can never say that after a period of 5 years, from the first parliament, you were saying that the women were active, they were trying to achieve. But for me, as long as we are unable to say that out of 10 women, we've assisted one woman, then we are going nowhere. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all members who raised questions and some contributions. I also want to thank all the ministers who are here, the chief whip and the chief chairperson of the NPOP. I believe that your presence is going to assist. I'm also indicating that, or showing my happiness, because as women sometimes we take ourselves for granted. We undermine other women. But one thing for sure is that you are here because you have a reason. You believe in yourself and you respect other women. Thank you very much for your presence. Honorable Minister, thereafter I will give the chief time to say something to them.
Yeah, and some of the things, yeah, it's like, when they talk about the ANC, I just feel that the chief will have something to say. And I'm sure she's going to say something. Honorable Minister.
Honorable Chair, and all the honorable members, protocol observed. This, when you opened the meeting, Chair, you said in March, this March, we have always have joined the international community in celebrating the International Women's Day. So we have also raised our hands and say we are Generation Equality. I think it's such a joy and a privilege to have this fullness in Parliament. Because when we entered the committee, we thought we were too young. But I think women, because we are women, we take care of half the world population, women, and take the other half that were born of us men.
there would be no men that were not born of a woman. So we are always taking care of things, and we forget that President Ramaphosa says the biggest enemy the women have is patriarchy. Patriarchy is our biggest enemy. During the time when we were forming women's coalition, during the negotiations, patriarchy had taken a back seat. But I can say during the past 5 years, I've seen patriarchy doing a pushback and wanting to reclaim its space. When patriarchy takes back its space, or fight to take over its space again, you will see how women must fight against each other. Then you must know, enemy number one, patriarchy is on the warpath. I think because we did not create patriarchy, because patriarchy is our enemy number one, we can come from all parties, but I said I don't play the rugby, but I like some portion of rugby called scrum, where you see people coming together and, you know, even coming from different political parties could make us someday have to remember that, yes, we have our political responsibility as members of parliament here, but we still have to take care of those other creations we've created, who patriarchy, you know, pushes or does pushback through them. Yes, the framework has been discussed with all the departments. Yes, the framework has been adopted by cabinet. And so therefore it can be shared with all the members. How I wish it would, in whichever other meeting, where we then say, let's tabulate this one in this administration, this we should achieve. But among other things that President has tended us on and has said he will take the lead is on this general women empowerment fund, but women financial inclusion. Because we can all be working, women work 24 hours. Women work in delivering babies in labor wards, women work in taking care of crying babies, women work as teachers and nurses and so on. But financial inclusion means, even in our government departments, chief directors, I'm just giving an example, do not earn the same, male and female. Male earn a little bit more than female. So, I haven't even gone to private sector. So, this framework is not just meant for government. It says public, what is it again? Private businesses should also be showing their hands. That's what PGE says. There's another issue that I thought we should share on sanitary dignity. As you said, Comrade Batabile, in between entering my business, arrived 150 something million from Treasury. It spread all over the country in provinces. Provinces can use it the way they want. When I arrived, I'm like, where is that money? When I arrived, Comrade Batabile said to me, look for that money. First question, where is the money? Oh, no, it is in the province. By who? By Treasury. Now, I don't know how many days we are left with towards the end of financial year. Treasury has gone back to province to say, hey, use that money any other who, because otherwise they're going to take it back. So we need that support, because one of the participants here said, support means getting resources, but also not only financial, but also other forms of resources to liberate women. I think if we say there were no achievements in the 25 years, we will not be telling the whole truth. There is a report on Beijing Plus 25 that because we couldn't travel to New York, was shared with women, especially because we knew we couldn't all travel because of our financial situation. But above that, I watched our UN women and our ambassador in New York. The world is here, number one, in taking these night issues of gender equality seriously. Well, of course, you're not number one, but in the developing world, while it's hard to raise your hand, we are. Have we fixed all our problems? No, because we are 25 years old. Never give up. Come, where it's necessary, and go back to your political affiliation. That's very good. The Steering Committee on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide was an interim one. I won't give it in, because it was formed by President responding to the outcry. We have just was it yesterday? Passed the MSP through cabinet. It has gone through parliament. Through a cabinet. National Strategic Plan on GBS. Now we can share it because cabinet had said so. But there are certain problems that we have still had to go through parliament. There are parliamentary processes that we still have to undergo. But this one, like the MSP, need not go to parliament. And I have the pleasure to say to you, we struggled, we waited, we were submitted this, colors and food stops and semicolons became issues, and then people sent back. Finally, it has gone through with all the commas and food stops. Let's also say, when you say women empowerment, if we say we have not achieved, what do you mean? If we say we're not happy with the measures we have achieved, where else? And we should continue to work together. This is, when you say in the language, we mean it. We're not going to finish it in my lifetime. But those who are taking over should be knowing what is it in reality that we have achieved. What is it that they are taking over? And indeed, this is not the work of one department. One department can go deep, but all of us have a responsibility in all the problems where we sit. It is also not the responsibility of a person who in a province or in a department is gender focal point. Because they put one person there and exclude that person as much as they can. After every administration, we make fresh commitments. The latest one is made through this framework is financial inclusion. Financial inclusion means everything else but money, including how business will open up the engine for women to participate, as we're talking about procurement. Procurement through business, through government, and also through business. This is if indeed we have raised our hands and said we are generation equality. I wasn't responding to questions. I just got excited because you had made it such a reality today. Not that it's a first meeting, but stop taking, I think, is the word I've had coming time and again. As for calling meetings when you have municipalities and districts and national departments, we do it quite often. But the thing is, who arrives? Who goes back and reports back to a constituency? Not to himself, I'm sorry, well, himself or herself. Because a few men who arrived, I saw one gentleman one man participating in a power Pan African Women's Organization meeting. And he was very active. Women were passing over pieces of papers
very vexing thing. I could see children to be with disappointment. But all women were like, ah, this country, this is the country that still sends a man to be the leader of the nation. Poor men. I couldn't look at the things when it all ended, because there was absolutely nothing. Even with all his good contributions. It is important that we take care. That's what we are about. Women, but we must also, I think, have a conversation again with treasury. Treasury from national to provinces to municipalities. If this framework is going to be working and clear. Absolutely nothing, not a single day should pass, and we haven't asked. So this, how do you get this? It's our responsibility, all of us. I thank you.
Minister?
Chief?
I'm covered. Not today, not now, not much.
Thank you very much. Chair, let me welcome the presentations and second or third or fourth the workshop on this framework. Chair, I think where we are now, we are late to think that we can make any impact for 2020-2021. How are we, when we have that workshop on framework, we must then say we're planning for 2021-2022. But what we're supposed to do at that particular juncture, we're supposed to lift issues that we think we want them not to be left out of the 2021-2022 budget process. So the budget must always have these meetings before the budget cycle starts, so that we don't follow the budget that is already been allocated there. So we can do better, Chair, but I think this is a good start on what we have done at the moment. Chair, on this is a global phenomenon, and last week I was in the Pan-African Parliament. The women, children, youth and persons with disability session, where all the 55 countries are saying the budget is not gender responsive, and we all agree. There are a lot of charters and protocols, and I think at a particular stage, Chair, of the Women's Caucus, especially on that we are sitting in various fora as Parliament, we must then check with the gender lens what is this forum saying about the gender and women responsive budget. Lift those so that when we correct those protocols, when we correct those conventions, they must be able to address the inequalities and imbalances that women have witnessed. Chair, with the International Women's Day, I'm just throwing this. We should have been proactive as this Women's Caucus. Multi-party Women's Caucus had nothing on the International Women's Day. Even if it was not on the day, the AIDS programming, maybe we should have approached your committee to say, let's put a slot. So that when we talk about Beijing, must not be about CSW there, but it must be, we localize. We must localize CSW. It must speak to us. It must speak to the aspirations of women and the challenges that are affecting women in our own country. And what is that we are doing as Parliament? We cannot do everything, but we must have clear targets so that when we are saying by end of the system, we want to have a clear legacy, we must be able to leave legacy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, short and straightforward. Thank you very much, Chief Whip. I think we've got few questions that have been raised that meet the two
to respond on them.
What I can say to most of the comments by the honourable members are suggestions on the way forward. What I can say is that we have noted the request for the training and workshop on the framework. It has been on the plans of the Multi-Party Women's Caucus as well. But I think we also need to take into consideration that it's not only women members who are members of the committee, so we need to ensure that our male members of the committees are also on board and empowered about the framework. So I think we've taken note of the need for a workshop on the gender, on the framework, and to ensure that on that training day, a variety of stakeholders are available to show that, in order to ensure that the training and the framework is cascaded into all spheres of government, including private institutions. Let me, and then maybe Joy has got some answers. Okay.
I just wanted to maybe say that what came through, there were not really questions but comments, and what consistently came through was not just the need to engage further with the framework, but also the issue of strengthening the national gender machinery. And I am aware that the Department of Women had started a process to also look into reviewing the national gender machinery. So one possibility is to, when we look at the framework, is to combine those two things and maybe engage with the department further about the status of that issue, that they could also give us some insight into how Parliament contributes to changing the gender machinery.
Thank you very much, Joy and Sembaka, and all honourable members. Thank you for your contribution. I believe this was a good start. There are issues that we said it needs to be looked at with this collective. Another thing that I feel I had to raise it, like the chief whip now, she was coming up with something to say this much. We haven't done anything as multi-party. I think this is for all of us. Let's try and bring in something if we do have issues that we feel that it need to be attended to by this caucus. I'm not saying that the chief was waited. We were communicating before the 8th of March, but there was something in between, and I said, even the steering committee realized some of the things to say, you need to go and sit with the chief whip in order to correct some of the issues. But I'm just saying, as women, sometimes there are issues or there are activities happening in our different provinces that we strongly feel that as women we can come together and share the experience. I think as multi-party we welcome that. It will be good if we do have those such programs in order to bring all of us together as women. By raising this, I just feel that women, if we stick together, there is a lot that we can achieve. If we are not going to take ourselves seriously, there's no one who can take us seriously. Thank you very much, honorable members. I believe the steering committee will meet in order to come up with a program of how are we going to deal with the issues raised here, or how are we going to bring in the program that is going to take us forward as multi-party. Thank you very much. The meeting adjourned.
Chairperson, for response.